This is Audible.
Audible Studios presents The Boglehead's Guide to the Three-Fund Portfolio, how a simple portfolio of three total market index funds outperforms most investors with less risk. Written by Taylor Larimore, performed by Noah Michael Levine. Forward by John C. Bogle. There is something truly remarkable about the intersection of something old and something new. First, a World War II veteran of the Battle of the Bulge has an idea for building a better world for investors. A decade later, modern technology begins to create unprecedented opportunities for the development of social networks, opening a whole new world for interpersonal communication. That combination of man and technology led to the creation of an investor-driven website for individual investors. The Army combat veteran, born in 1924, is Taylor Larimore, distinguished citizen of Miami, Florida, and a truly wonderful human being. The new technology is the internet. The idea? To allow investors in the Vanguard mutual funds to share their ideas, their investment experiences, and their financial strategies with one another, as it is said, without fear or favor. Founded by Taylor in 1998 as the Vanguard Diehards, the name of the new website was changed to the Bogleheads in 2007. Their first meeting, Diehards 1, took place in March 2000. When I joined some 20 Vanguard investors in Taylor's Miami condominium for dinner, friendship, and lively conversation about investment strategy and policy. Then to Vanguard's home in Valley Forge, Pennsylvania on June 8, 2001, with 40 Bogleheads in attendance. Then to Chicago, where Morningstar hosted the three-day gathering for 50 dedicated investors. Next to Denver and the Chartered Financial Analyst Conference in 2004, with 90 Bogleheads in attendance. On to San Diego 2008 and to Fort Worth in 2009 before settling down to roost each year thereafter at a mid-sized hotel near Vanguard's headquarters in the Philadelphia region. The hotel's capacity limits the attendance to some 225 Bogleheads and the openings are quickly filled, a full house every year since then. I've talked to the Bogleheads at all of these meetings. Each October for 10 years now, I'm asked to summarize the major events at Vanguard in the mutual fund industry and in the financial markets, and to place them in historical perspective. The format has barely changed. Taylor Larimore is known unofficially as the King of the Bogleheads. His friend Mel Lindauer is known as the Prince. Mel runs these annual gatherings at which a range of experts speak, including authors and investment advisors Bill Bernstein and Rick Ferry. In recent years, Gus Sauter, former chief investment officer at Vanguard, now retired, has become a regular speaker. But the limited size and scope of these gatherings merely scratches the surface of the vast network the Bogleheads have developed. To date, the Bogleheads.org forum has been receiving up to 4.5 million hits per day, and in a single day, the site has been visited by as many as 90,000 unique individuals. I believe the forum is the most popular financial website in America. And why not? The members want to help one another. There are no financial incentives for doing so, nor are there any costs for participating. Selfless is the modus operandi. The three-fund portfolio. Taylor Larimore has participated in the writing and publication of two earlier books, both reaching large numbers of investors, The Bogleheads Guide to Investing 2006 and The Bogleheads Guide to Retirement Planning 2009. In The Bogleheads Guide to the Three-Fund Portfolio, Taylor goes on his own to explore one of the subjects dearest to his heart, using three all-market index funds. Vanguard Total Stock Market Index Fund, U.S. Stock Market, Vanguard Total International Stock Index Fund, non-U.S. stock market, and Vanguard Total Bond Market Index Fund, U.S. bonds. Taylor's idea combines the nth degree of diversification, a sensible investment balance between stocks and bonds, efficiency and economy. Simplicity is the watchword. Yes, as he notes, investors' allocation among these three asset classes depends on their particular investment goals, risk tolerance, age, and wealth. Even investors' temperament comes into play, for financial markets are volatile. Sometimes the financial markets giveth, and sometimes, with far less frequency, they taketh away. I'd estimate that thousands of Vanguard investors have subscribed to the idea of the three-fund portfolio. As originally conceived by Taylor, the initial allocation into each of the three index funds would be based on the investor's goals, time frame, risk tolerance, and personal financial situation. A word about non-U.S. stocks. In my first book, Bogle on Mutual Funds, published in 1994, I wrote that a long-term investor need not allocate any of his or her assets to non-U.S. stocks, but if they disagreed, I argued, They should limit their holdings to 20% of their stock portion, given the significant extra risks involved, such as currency risk and sovereign risk. My opinion was based on my expectation that the American economy would continue to grow over the long term, and that the market values of U.S. corporations would grow faster than the values of non-U.S. corporations. Since 1994, as it was to happen, the U.S. S&P 500 index was to rise by 743%, while the EAFE, Europe, Australasia, and Far East index of non-U.S. stocks rose by 237%. That I was right is beside the point. It may have been luck, but now that U.S. stocks have dominated for nearly 25 years, it may well be time for reversion to the mean, with non-U.S. stocks leading the way rather than following. Who really knows? No one knows what tomorrow may bring. But I'm inclined to stick by my earlier conclusion that holdings of non-U.S. stocks should be limited to no more than 20% of equities. For U.S. investors, Taylor suggests that 20% of the equity allocation should be placed in a total international stock index fund. That suggested 20% is essentially a compromise between my suggested maximum of 20% and the minimum 20% recommended by a Vanguard study. A good book by a wise author. Please note that the fine points of asset allocation in the three-fund portfolio constitute only a small part of this fine book. It is replete with sound advice and will effectively serve both experienced and novice investors. Taylor describes the investment lessons he learned the hard way by risking his own hard-earned money and falling short of the market's return. He tried to beat the market by picking individual stocks, both through an investment club and on his own. He chased the returns of hot mutual funds, only to suffer the inevitable fate of reversion to the mean. He followed investment newsletters that claimed to be able to beat the market, but of course, did not. He invested with a stockbroker who was good at collecting fees, but had no ability to beat the market. Finally, Taylor read my first book, Bogle on Mutual Funds, and was persuaded by my unassailable cost matters hypothesis. The gross return of the market, minus the costs of investing, equals net return to investors. If active investors in aggregate own the market, which they do, as a group, they receive the market's return, minus the high costs of active investing. Index investors also own the market, but at rock-bottom cost. So the average actively managed portfolio will, of necessity, underperform the average indexed portfolio. Investing in index funds is the only way to guarantee that you'll receive your fair share of the market's return. Taylor goes on to list many of the other benefits of broad market indexing, including the elimination of manager risk, individual stock rise, sector risk, and tracking error, just to name a few. He cites numerous experts who support index investing, such as David Swensen, Warren Buffett, and Paul Samuelson. Nobel laureate William Sharpe concluded his influential paper, The Arithmetic of Active Management, with these words. Properly measured, the average actively managed dollar must underperform the average passively managed dollar net of costs. Empirical analyses that appear to refute this principle are guilty of improper measurement. The three-fund portfolio will help you to develop a sound asset allocation strategy, make smart investment selections, and guide the implementation of your plan. Taylor offers one final piece of advice, and it's a mantra I've repeated countless times throughout my long career in finance. Stay the course. As I said in my book, Common Sense on Mutual Funds, no matter what happens, stick to your program. I've said stay the course 1,000 times, and I meant it every time. It's the most important single piece of investment wisdom I can give to you. A power seen from afar. In writing the foreword to the Bogleheads Guide to Investing in 2005, I cited this expression from Democracy in America, written by Alexis de Tocqueville in 1835, nearly 2 centuries ago. As soon as several of the inhabitants of the United States have taken up an opinion or a feeling they wish to promote, they look out for mutual assistance, and as soon as they have found one another out, they combine. From that moment, they are no longer isolated men, but a power seen from afar, whose actions serve for an example and whose language is listened to. Yes, with Taylor Larimore's leadership, the Bogleheads have become a power in the field of independent, unbiased investment information. Be sure to visit the remarkable Bogleheads.org website. Test your investment decisions on the anvil of the ideas offered by the intelligent investors who frequent the site and are eager to serve you. You'll find a family of fellow investors who believe in my rock-solid philosophy of long-term investing focused largely on broad-market, low-cost index funds. When joining the forum, you can exchange your own ideas with those of other investors who have had experience with their own asset allocations, as well as with many other issues. Index funds are designed simply to assure you that you will earn your fair share of the returns delivered in each segment of the three-fund portfolio or any other indexing strategy that meets your needs. Enjoy Taylor's wonderful book, learn about the benefits of index funds, and reap the benefits of low-cost investing. There will be times when the waters are rough and fear, even panic, will hold sway. When those trying times come, be sure to, yes, stay the course. John C. Bogle, September 21, 2017. Preface. The History of the Bogleheads Three-Fund Portfolio. I often am asked, what's so special about the three-fund portfolio? The answer is simple. By owning just three low-cost total market index funds, total U.S. equity, total U.S. bond, and total international equity, investors have historically outperformed the vast majority of mutual funds over time. I'll start at the beginning and will attempt to share with you some of the lessons I learned the hard way over many, many years. Yes, I, a nonagenarian, have seen just about everything the world has to share. The Roaring Twenties were marked by great exuberance in the stock market. The Dow Industrials climbed from a low of 66 in 1920 to a high of 381 in 1929. Then came the worst bear market in U.S. history. The Dow plunged 89% to a low of 41 in 1932. An 89% decline requires a 909% gain to recover. A bear market in stocks can be a terrifying experience if your financial future is at stake. I was born in 1924, the year the first open-end mutual fund was established, Massachusetts Investment Trust. The closest equivalents were called investment trusts. In 1929, my grandfather, Christopher Coombs, was one of three principals at the top of the world's largest investment trust, United Founders Corporation. Investment trusts, later called mutual funds, must be in my blood. The year 1929 was the beginning of a long and terrible depression in the United States. Unemployment rose from 3% to 25% of the nation's workforce. More than 8,500 U.S. banks failed. There was no government insurance, as now provided by the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, FDIC, which insures most deposits to $250,000 in insured banks. During that horrible time, many bank depositors lost their life savings. My parents owned a restaurant on the outskirts of Boston. As the depression deepened, few people could afford to eat out. With fewer and fewer customers, my parents lost the business. Having no other income, Social Security and unemployment compensation didn't exist at that time, our family left Boston and moved into my grandfather's waterfront winter mansion in Miami. A few years later, grandfather and his United Founders Corporation went bankrupt. His home was sold on the courthouse steps, and we were forced to move into a small Miami apartment. It was an unexpected shock for all of us. This was my personal introduction to the stock market. Lesson learned. A 100% stock portfolio can be dangerous. After returning from World War II and graduating from the University of Miami, I began selling life insurance. I was the leading first-year agent for the Mutual Benefit Life Insurance Company, and I was just beginning to earn serious money. Despite my wariness of stocks, I joined with other friends to become a member of a newly formed stock investment club organized by a neighbor who was a Bach & Company stockbroker. The idea was that each member would contribute $50 per month to buy individual stocks carefully selected by our own revolving three-person investment committee. Our club members started out with great optimism, encouraged by the Bach broker, who soon became our friend. I didn't know then that every good salesman tries to become your friend. Unfortunately, our investment club stock-picking ability was less than stellar, and despite our careful analysis, we eventually realized that our stock returns, after hidden brokerage costs, were substantially underperforming the overall stock market. This ended our investment club experiment. This was my personal introduction to stock picking. Lesson learned. Believing a broker is your friend can be dangerous. When the club disbanded, I continued to buy individual stocks, thinking I could do better. After a few more years, it became evident that I was even worse at picking stocks than our investment committee had been. Fortunately, this ended my attempts to beat the market by buying individual stocks. There is no way that spending a few hours a week looking at individual securities is going to equip an investor to compete with the incredibly talented, highly qualified, extremely educated individuals who spend their entire professional career trying to pick stocks. David Swenson, Chief Investment Officer, Yale University. Lesson learned. Avoid the lure of individual stocks. My failure to invest successfully in individual stocks made me more determined to find a better way. I began taking regular trips to the library to learn how to beat the market. The library subscribed to dozens of financial newsletters. The most popular newsletter at the time was a bi-weekly, the Mutual Fund Forecaster, which listed hundreds of mutual funds and showed their past performance over various time periods. The forecaster would recommend which funds to buy, the best performers, and which to sell, the worst performers. I was sold on the idea because the strategy sounded so logical. I bought my own subscription, began buying mutual funds, and dutifully followed the forecaster's recommendations for several years. You can guess what happened. Our portfolio continued to underperform the market, and the forecaster newsletter eventually failed. Lesson learned? Past performance does not forecast future performance. Most financial newsletters are written by market timers who believe, or pretend they know, they can forecast bull and bear markets. All market timing letters claim great forecasting ability, usually by showing selected periods when the writer's forecast proved to be correct. I decided to give market timing a try, and for several years, I followed the forecasting advice offered by various market timing newsletters. As you can probably guess again, my results were not good. The funds I bought often underperformed the market, and the funds I sold did better. After nearly 50 years in this business, I do not know of anybody who has done market timing successfully and consistently. I don't even know anybody who knows anybody who has done it successfully and consistently. Jack Bogle. Lesson learned? Investment newsletters are a waste of money and market timing doesn't work. Still undaunted, my next attempt to beat the market was to study the huge Morningstar Mutual Funds binder. It was 6 inches thick and updated bi-weekly. The binder was available in most large libraries, and it's no longer published in print. Studying the past performance of mutual funds, I learned that Morningstar's top-performing five-star funds seldom remained at five stars. Many of the top performers became bottom dwellers. That's known as reversion to the mean. In the investment world, it's the equivalent of gravity. In time, Newton's high-flying stock or stock mutual fund will fall. This was eye-opening to me because after reading all the mutual fund rankings in most newspapers and magazines, I thought all I had to do was buy the top-performing mutual funds to beat the market. What else could these rankings be good for? Answer? To sell newspapers and magazines. In 2002, while Jack Bogle was putting the final touches on a speech, The Telltale Chart, that he was to make at the Morningstar Investment Conference in Chicago, I took the empty seat beside him. In this keynote speech, accompanied by lots of charts, Jack talked about reversion to the mean and much more. His speech helped those in attendance become better investors, and it can help you too. You may read that speech by going to https://www.vanguard.com/bogle_site/sp2002-0626.html. Buying funds based purely on their past performance is one of the stupidest things an investor can do. Jason Zweig, author and Wall Street Journal columnist. Lesson learned, again. Past performance does not forecast future performance. In 1986, we moved our family securities from Merrill Lynch to Vanguard. It was a very difficult decision because our broker was a longtime friend who sometimes invited us to go sailing on his beautiful sailboat, which I now realize we helped pay for. Footnote, as it turns out, we were not alone. You may enjoy reading Where Are All the Customers? Or A Good Hard Look at Wall Street by Fred Schwed Jr. The Wiley Classics Edition 2006 is introduced by Jason Zweig. After we left Merrill Lynch, our broker never invited us to go sailing again. Looking back, leaving Merrill Lynch and moving to Vanguard was the best financial decision we ever made. Lesson learned? Avoid expensive stockbrokers and their hidden fees. Thinking I could beat the market with Vanguard's no-load funds and their low expense ratios, we accumulated 16 Vanguard funds, most actively managed funds, that were doing well at the time. When one of our funds underperformed, I would replace it with a better performing fund. I didn't realize it at the time, but I was buying high and selling low. Needless to say, our portfolio continued to underperform the market. Lesson learned? Buying high and selling low is a losing strategy. In 1994, I had the good fortune to read Professor Burton Malkiel's A Random Walk Down Wall Street and John Bogle's first book, Bogle on Mutual Funds. Suddenly, a light switch turned on. These two books changed everything I thought I knew about investing. Based on academic studies, they both helped convince this writer to become an indexer. Indexing means owning all the stocks in a certain category, as opposed to picking and choosing individual stocks. I now own and have read every book written by Mr. Bogle. I credit Jack with leading me to the three-fund portfolio and a comfortable retirement. I enjoy telling my friends, I live in the house that Jack built, and I know many friends and Bogleheads who will make the same sorts of claims. Here's what we do by following the simple Boglehead investment philosophy. 1. Develop a workable plan. 2. Invest early and often. 3. Never bear too much or too little risk. 4. Diversify. 5. Never try to time the market. 6. Use index funds when possible. 7. Keep costs low. 8. Minimize taxes. 9. Invest with simplicity. And 10. Stay the course. Bogleheads speak out. Taylor, your post and additional reading at the start of my investing career convinced me of the wisdom of the three-fund portfolio. It has served my family well and has freed up time and energy for the more important things in life. EM. Your original post on the three total market fund portfolio on the Vanguard Diehards Morningstar Forum in 1999 set me on my investment journey and a life lesson on simplicity. I'll be indebted to you forever for all your guidance all these years. SU. The older I get, the more I am convinced the three-fund portfolio is an excellent choice for most investors. AB. The best reason I found to stick to a three-fund portfolio or close to it? Experience. It took us 30 years or so to learn the value of simplicity. These days, we don't stray too far from the basics. Total stock market, total index, and total bond. I must say, it sure feels like a big weight has been taken off our backs. BT. Thanks to you and the Bogleheads' philosophy, my investing in the three-fund portfolio with a 50-50 asset allocation has been one of the best things I ever did. UL. As easy as 1, 2, 3. Simple, but not simplistic. Simple minds think alike, and perhaps there is greatness in vast numbers of them far sharper than my own. But remember, simple does not mean simplistic. To wit, Dow Jones MarketWatch columnist Paul B. Farrell has shared data on 8 winning portfolios for investors, which he dubs the lazy portfolios. Included are suggested portfolios from investment luminaries like David Swensen, CIO of the Yale University Endowment, Ted Aronson, founder of $25 billion asset manager AJO Partners, coffeehouse investor Bill Schulteis, and best-selling personal investment authors Scott Burns and Bill Bernstein. Of great interest is that the simplest of them all is the second grader portfolio, a three-fund starter portfolio for young investors like Kevin Roth, the son of financial advisor Alan Roth. Alan Roth is the founder of Wealth Logic and a columnist and author. Together, father and son co-authored How a Second Grader Beats Wall Street when Kevin was just 8. Over the last 12 years, the father-son team's investment returns with the three-fund solution that all Bogleheads know might surprise you. Admittedly, the portfolio is allocated aggressively towards stocks, consistent with the way young investors with a long life ahead of them should invest. But hard data shows that simple wins, as does starting early like Kevin. Here are the results, published in January 2017 by MarketWatch. Total returns for 8 lazy portfolios. Aronson Family Tax Table. 1-year return, 20.16%. 3-year annual returns, 8.85%. 5-year annual returns, 8.76%. 10-year annual returns, 6.77%. Fund Advice Ultimate Buy and Hold. 1-year return, 14.73%. 3-year annual returns, 6.31%. 5-year annual returns, 6.47%. And 10-year annual returns, 5.09%. Dr. Bernstein Smart Money. 1-year return, 14.11%. 3-year annual returns, 7.35%. 5-year annual returns, 8.09%, and 10-year annual returns, 6.17%. Coffeehouse, 1-year return, 12.41%, 3-year annual returns, 6.68%, 5-year annual returns, 8.13%, 10-year annual returns, 6.76%. Yale U's Unconventional, 1-year return, 14.68%, 3-year annual returns, 6.39%, 5-year annual returns, 8.05%, and 10-year annual returns, 6.72%. Dr. Bernstein's no-brainer, 1-year return, 20%, 3-year annual returns, 9.07%, 5-year annual returns, 9.88%, and 10-year annual returns, 7.04%. Margaritaville, 1-year return, 19.39%, 3-year annual returns, 8.36%, 5-year annual returns, 7.74%, 10-year annual returns, 5.58%. Second Graders Starter, 1-year return, 24.92%, 3-year annual returns, 11.33%, 5-year annual returns, 11.77%, and 10-year annual returns, 7.55%. S&P 500, 1-year return, 26.64%, 3-year annual returns, 13.97%, 5-year annual returns, 15.98%, and 10-year annual returns, 10.16%. Source, www.marketwatch.com/lazyportfolio. Whether or not an investment portfolio is working for the investor typically rests with its level of complexity, notes Alan Roth. Some of the worst portfolios I've seen have been so mind-numbingly complex that the investors had no idea what strategy, if any, they were following to achieve such horrible performance. My investing ideology has always been that simple portfolios are better, and I'm not alone in that belief. Alan and I think alike. Pick a stock/bond allocation that aligns with your goals and have the discipline to accept the bumpy ride the stock market sometimes serves up. This will show you your risk tolerance. No need to buy high and sell low and become your own worst enemy. Like me, like Kevin, like everyone else, you'll find it much easier to stick with your investment plan, tweaking the allocations to the three funds as you get older. Source, Alan Roth. Investing should be simple. A three-fund portfolio is all you need. AARP, November 3, 2016. Chapter 1. The Investment Industry. The U.S. investment industry is the largest and most profitable in the world. A 2013 study by the United States Consumer Financial Protection Bureau reported the following. The total amount spent annually by financial institutions and other financial service providers on consumer financial products and services, including both awareness advertising and direct marketing, is approximately $17 billion. This money comes out of the pockets of the industry's customers and goes into the pockets of company owners, brokers, financial advisors, and others seeking to make a profit at the expense of investors. Rick Ferry, CFA, a former stockbroker, retired financial advisor, and author of 8 financial books, wrote, "Let's face it, most investment companies are in the business to make money from you, not for you. Every dollar you save in commissions and fee expenses goes right to your bottom line." Just as the gambling industry wants people to think they can beat the casino, the investment industry wants investors to think they can beat the market. Of course, a few lucky gamblers do beat the casino, but most don't. It is the same for investors. Some will beat the market, but most won't. Why do some investors outperform the market while others don't? Princeton professor Burton D. Malkiel, who co-inspired my light switch on moment mentioned in the preface with my reading of his timeless A Random Walk Down Wall Street, offers this explanation. A blindfolded monkey throwing darts at a newspaper's financial pages could select a portfolio that would do just as well as one carefully selected by experts. This, of course, means that in a room full of monkeys, as in a room full of mutual fund managers, there will be winners. Unfortunately, for monkeys, managers, and investors, the winners are unlikely to repeat. Bill Miller is a perfect example. Mr. Miller was the manager of Legg Mason Value Trust, LMVTX. His fund is the only mutual fund that was able to beat the S&P 500 index 15 years in a row. Miller became a celebrity in the mutual fund world, and investors eagerly poured their money into his fund. Unfortunately, like many winning mutual funds, LMVTX plunged to the bottom 1% of its Morningstar category over the next 15 years. Remember, reversion to the mean, like gravity, does bring us all back to earth. Many in the financial services industry hate indexing because it is difficult for them to make money selling low-cost index funds. The industry spends billions of dollars attempting to convince us that they can help us beat the market by choosing winning individual stocks, bonds, and mutual funds for us. Fact, they cannot. In the 35th anniversary edition of the Hulbert Financial Digest, publisher Mark Hulbert wrote that when he began tracking newsletters in 1980, there were 28 of them. Of those 28, only 9 have survived. The rest are gone. Of the 9 newsletter survivors, only 2 have ever beaten the market, measured by the Wilshire 5000 Total Market Index, on a risk-adjusted basis. Just 2 out of 28. Those are pretty poor odds. The benefits of low-cost index funds and exchange-traded funds, ETFs, which bogleheads have been preaching about for nearly 20 years, are now becoming more widely known and accepted. The evidence of the superior performance of index funds has become so overwhelming that in April 2017, the New York Times reported that, thanks to the power of its index funds, Vanguard is pulling in more money than all of the other fund companies in the business. Bogleheads speak out. The more I struggle to perfect and tilt my portfolio with ever smaller adjustments, the more apparent the inherent wisdom of the three-fund portfolio becomes. It is a marvelous, straightforward solution to a complex issue. Dare I say, it is a supremely elegant solution. TT. After hours and hours of reading, the light bulb came on. You have probably saved me thousands of dollars and quite literally could make me millions of dollars more. SN. After years of actively managing my own investments and now nearing retirement, I've decided to take the more passive approach of the three-fund portfolio. After extensive reading on this subject and from my own personal investing experience, I have become a believer. Its simplicity and long-term results are a thing of beauty. And why? Taylor, thank you for the three-fund portfolio. At 56, I have been through 2 advisors, then 5 years of my own efforts chasing alpha, and the light bulb went off last fall. I moved everything to Vanguard, and now I am using the three-fund portfolio. DA. Bernstein's Big If Paradox. Bill Bernstein, who left his career as a neurologist and became a financial advisor to millionaires, has written a short 45-page booklet, If You Can, intended for millennials but applicable to all investors. He writes, "Would you believe me if I told you there's an investment strategy that a 7-year-old could understand that will take you 15 minutes of work per year, that will outperform 90% of financial professionals in the long run, and that will make you a millionaire over time?" Well, it's true. That's it. If you can follow this simple recipe throughout your working career, you will almost certainly beat out most professional investors. More importantly, you'll likely accumulate enough savings to retire comfortably. Bernstein's recipe? Start by saving 15% of your salary at age 25, putting the funds into a 401k, an IRA, or a taxable account, or all 3. Divide your savings into just 3 different mutual funds, a U.S. total stock market index fund, an international total stock market index fund, and a U.S. total bond market index fund. This great little booklet is currently available as a free PDF at www.etf.com/docs/ifyoucan.pdf. Chapter 2. John C. Bogle, the investor's best friend. Footnote. This book could not have been written without John C. Jack Bogle, who invented the first retail index mutual fund and each of the 3 total market index funds in the three-fund portfolio. Jack, as he prefers to be called, Bogle, is the founder of Vanguard, the only mutual fund company owned by its investors, not by its founder or outside stockholders. This was a tremendous gift to Vanguard investors, since it means that, unlike other fund companies, Vanguard does not use part of investor returns to pay company stockholders. The result is that, after company expenses, all the Vanguard fund returns go to the Vanguard fund investors. The results are remarkable. For the 10-year period ending September 30, 2017, 9 of 9 Vanguard money market funds, 55 of 58 Vanguard bond funds, 22 of 22 Vanguard balanced funds, and 128 of 137 Vanguard stock funds, for a total of 214 of 226 Vanguard funds, outperformed their Lipper peer group average, Vanguard report. Jack Bogle is one of a small handful of people who made the investing world serve the hopes and dreams of ordinary people. Whatever his subject, he speaks and writes from a strong moral belief that finance should be simple, honest, and fair. Jane Bryant Quinn, syndicated columnist and author of Making the Most of Your Money. I rank this Bogle invention, index fund, along with the invention of the wheel, the alphabet, the Gutenberg printing press, and wine and cheese, a mutual fund that never made Bogle rich but elevated the long-term returns of the mutual fund owners. Paul Samuelson, Nobel laureate. The Vanguard advantage is becoming more widely recognized. Vanguard is now the largest mutual fund company in the world with over $4 trillion in assets. Jack Bogle could easily have become a multi-billionaire by taking a share of his company profits. Instead, he chose to give the money back to the investors who own the Vanguard funds. My wife and I first met Mr. Bogle in February 1999 at the Money Show in Orlando, Florida, where Jack was the keynote speaker. Jack describes our first meeting in the foreword of our first book, The Boglehead's Guide to Investing. It was not until February 3, 1999 that I met my first Boglehead. The occasion was the Money Show in Orlando, Florida, where I gave a contentious speech about investment principles, the clash of the cultures in investing, complexity versus simplicity, that at once seemed to confound the hosts who invited me to address the show, to infuriate the sponsor firms, all offering their own routes to easy riches, and to amaze and delight the audience of several thousand individual investors. Shortly before my talk, Taylor Larimore, there with his wife Pat, introduced himself to me. Taylor, then and now considered the unofficial leader of the Bogleheads, proved to be as fine a human being as I've ever met. Warm, thoughtful, intelligent, investment savvy, and eager to help others. A combat veteran of World War II and an exceptional sailor are only a few aspects of Taylor's background. I mention them because the first demands courage and discipline, the second, careful planning and staying the course one has set, all the while adjusting to the winds and tides. These traits, as it happens, are the principal traits of the successful investor. My next opportunity to meet Mr. Bogle was when he came to Miami in March 2000. He was again the keynote speaker, this time at the Miami Herald Making Money Seminar. Mel Lindauer and I had become good friends on the Morningstar Vanguard Diehards online forum. We extended an open invitation on the forum to anyone who would like to join us for dinner at the first Boglehead reunion to be held in my Miami condominium. Inasmuch as Mr. Bogle would be in town for the Miami Herald seminar, we took a chance that he just might attend our Boglehead event. We invited him to join us and, as fate would have it, he accepted. It was a beautiful evening for the 21 Bogleheads who attended. My late wife, Pat, prepared a delicious Florida lobster dinner, and Mr. Bogle told us of the difficulties he experienced when attempting to start a new kind of mutual fund company that would be owned by its investors. Jack answered all our questions in his usual honest and forthright way. During the ensuing years, I have had the privilege of becoming close friends with Jack and his lovely wife, Eve. Jack was very kind and referred to me as one of his heroes in his 2011 book, Don't Count on It. Of course, Jack is the real hero for having the courage to fight the industry in voice, print, and action to give ordinary investors a fair shake. Today, Mr. Bogle lives with his wife in an unpretentious home near the Vanguard campus. He drives an aging Volvo and still wears the $14 watch given to him by a friend while he was in the hospital waiting for his 1996 heart transplant. Jack retired as chairman of Vanguard in 1999. Now, his weekdays are usually spent in the John C. Bogle Research Center, where he continues working on behalf of investors. As you might suspect, with such a generous human being, he donates much of his income to charity. Jack Bogle's contributions to the world have not gone unnoticed. He has received hundreds of awards, including being named to Time Magazine's list of the world's 100 most powerful and influential people and Fortune Magazine's one of the investment industry's four giants of the 20th century. If a statue is ever erected to honor the person who has done the most for American investors, the hands-down choice should be Jack Bogle. Warren Buffett, in his 2016 annual letter to Berkshire shareholders. Bogleheads speak out. It is incredible how much knowledge has gone into the simple choices that Taylor proposes. UN. Thanks to the Bogleheads and Taylor Larimore, I have learned that by living below my means and investing in total market index funds using a three-fund portfolio, I will reap my share of the future returns of the three broad markets, whatever these returns are. L.O. The three-fund portfolio is majestic in its depth of understanding and simplicity. L.E. Thanks for all your generous sharing of time and knowledge to this community and the brilliance of the three-fund portfolio. A.L. Chapter 3. John Bogle introduces three total market index funds. Now that you know the story of how Jack Bogle and I first met and became such good friends, Let's press on to how the rubber meets the road for individual investors like you and me. We will go point by point, benefit by benefit, and make it as easy as 1, 2, 3. In 1976, Mr. Bogle introduced the world's first retail index mutual fund, the Vanguard 500 Index Fund, containing 500 large U.S. stocks. He later determined that a single stock fund containing nearly all U.S. stocks, including large caps, mid caps, and small caps, would be an improvement over what was then available. He also recognized the need for a single, diversified, high-quality bond fund and the demand for international diversification. The result was his introduction of three low-cost total market index funds. Vanguard Total Stock Market Index Fund Investor Shares, VTSMX, and Admiral Shares, VTSAX, introduced in 1992, allow investors to own more than 3,500 U.S. company stocks at extremely low cost. Investor Shares, $3,000 minimum, have an expense ratio of 0.15%. Admiral Shares, $10,000 minimum, have an expense ratio of 0.04%. Putting this in dollars means that an investor can invest $10,000 at a cost of only $4 per year. Truly remarkable. Vanguard Total Bond Market Index Fund Investor Shares, VBMFX, and Admiral Shares, VBTLX, introduced in 1986, allow investors to own more than 8,000 very diversified high-quality U.S. bonds. The expense ratio, the percentage of a fund's net assets used to pay a portion of its annual expenses, is currently 0.15% for Vanguard's investor shares. Admiral shares have an expense ratio of 0.05%. Vanguard Total International Stock Index Fund Investor Shares, VGTSX, and Admiral Shares, VTIAX, introduced in 1996, allow investors to hold more than 6,000 international stocks, including emerging market stocks. Investor shares have an expense ratio of 0.18%. Admiral shares have an expense ratio of 0.12%. Thanks to Jack Bogle, for the first time in history, ordinary investors can own more than 17,000 diversified, non-overlapping, worldwide securities at an amazingly low cost. Investors are catching on. All three of Jack's total market index funds are now the world's largest funds in their category. I favor the All Market Index Fund as the best choice for most investors. Don't look for the needle. Buy the haystack. Remarks by John Bogle to the Investment Analyst Society. Bogleheads speak out. Taylor's three-fund portfolio postings win hands down for the best thing I've ever read on any finance site, anywhere, ever. CL. As I approach retirement, I am more and more aware of the debt I owe to all Bogleheads and specifically to Taylor. His books led me to the three-fund portfolio plus tips, which has made all the difference as I approach retirement with a surprising seven-figure portfolio, DP. The simplicity of it, the low expenses, low taxes, and diversification is impressive, SG. With all the complicated and confusing messages about investing, the three-fund portfolio is a breath of fresh air and the essence of what John Bogle has taught all these years, ST. The Rick Ferry Alex Behnke Study, published by Betterment in February 2014. In June 2013, Rick Ferry, CFA, and his fellow researcher Alex Behnke, CFP, did a 28-page study comparing the returns of the three Vanguard Total Market Index funds in the three-fund portfolio with those of 5,000 portfolios of randomly selected, comparable, actively managed funds over 10-year and 16-year periods, 2003 to 2012, and 1997 to 2012, respectively. Their conclusions over 16 years based on learning that the outperformance of the index portfolio was 82.9% were: the longer an index portfolio is held, the better its performance relative to an all-actively managed portfolio. A diversified portfolio holding only index funds in all asset classes is difficult to beat in the short term and becomes more difficult to beat over time. Investors increase their probability of meeting their investment goals with a diversified all-index fund portfolio held for the long term. Chapter 4. 20 Benefits of Total Market Index Funds, in no particular order. Benefit 1. No advisor risk. The three-fund portfolio is remarkably easy to maintain. For this reason, most three-fund investors can avoid the additional cost and risks of using a broker or a financial advisor. The search by the elite for superior investment advice has caused it, in aggregate, to waste more than $100 billion over the past decade. Warren Buffett, in his 2017 annual letter to Berkshire shareholders. There are two primary risks when using an advisor: incompetence and conflict of interest. Incompetence. In most states, the minimum level of education needed to become a broker or a financial advisor is lower than that needed to become a hairdresser or an electrician. Most states do not require even a high school diploma to become a broker or a financial advisor. Financial advisors are required to take a state licensing exam that tests basic product knowledge and awareness of the applicable state and federal laws. However, none are required to have any substantive or formal education in financial planning itself. Conflict of interest. You want the lowest cost subtracted from your returns. Your advisor wants the largest income for himself and his family. You can guess who is likely to win. You must understand that whatever the advisor is paid comes out of the return on your investment. The cumulative impact of advisor and broker fees on an investment lifetime can be huge. For example, with an annual fee rate of 0.10% and a time horizon of 3 years, the effect on your investment is negative 0.3%, 5 years, negative 0.05%, 10 years, negative 1%, 20 years, negative 2%, 30 years, negative 3%, 40 years, negative 3.9%. With an annual fee rate of 0.25%, time horizon 3 years, negative 0.7%, 5 years, negative 1.2%, 10 years, negative 2.5%, 20 years, negative 4.9%, 30 years, negative 7.2%, and 40 years, negative 9.5%. With an annual fee rate of 0.5% and a time horizon of 3 years, the effect on your investment is negative 1.5%. 5 years, 2.5%, 10 years, 4.9%, 20 years, 9.5%, 30 years, 13.9%, 40 years, 18.1%. With an annual fee rate of 1% and a time horizon of 3 years, the effect on your investment is negative 2.9%, 5 years, negative 4.9%, 10 years, negative 9.5%, 20 years, 18%, 30 years, negative 25.8%, 40 years, negative 32.8%. With an annual fee rate of 2% and a time horizon of 3 years, the effect on your investment is negative 5.8%, 5 years, negative 9.4%, 10 years, negative 18%, 20 years, negative 32.7%, 30 years, negative 44.8%, and 40 years, negative 54.7%. And lastly, with an annual fee rate of 3%, time horizon 3 years, the effect on your investment is negative 8.5%, 5 years, negative 13.7%, 10 years, negative 25.6%, 20 years, negative 44.6%, 30 years, negative 58.8%, and 40 years, negative 69.3%. The source for this data is Vanguard. Advisor costs appear minor and are easily hidden. Several studies have shown that brokers and advisors may actually earn more than their customers. Brokers and advisors can be ethically challenged, and many do not put their clients first. True costs often are hidden in the fine print of statements their clients receive. Hidden fees are a little bit like high blood pressure. You don't really feel it, and you don't necessarily see it, but it'll eventually kill you. Jeff Acheson, CFP. On April 14, 2016, the U.S. Department of Labor proposed a fiduciary rule that would require financial brokers to consider their clients' best interest instead of their own when offering retirement investing advice. It is not surprising that insurance companies, mutual funds, and brokerages with an army of lobbyists are vigorously fighting implementation of the fiduciary rule. Act as if every broker, insurance salesman, mutual fund salesperson, and financial advisor you encounter is a hardened criminal, and stick to low-cost index funds, and you'll do just fine. William J. Bernstein, author of If You Can. I am not saying to avoid all advisors. For those who really need one, a low-cost advisor can be worth the fees charged. A good fiduciary advisor can provide services that many investors may not be able to handle themselves. For example, a good advisor will help determine your goals and determine how much you'll need to save to reach those goals. Help structure your most appropriate asset allocation. Help you stay the course during bear markets. Help with insurance needs, including life, disability, and healthcare. give advice about taxes, Social Security, annuities, tax loss harvesting, rebalancing, order of withdrawals, estate planning, and other financial matters. If you feel you need the services of an advisor, Vanguard offers a personal advisory service. Their non-commissioned professional advisors currently charge just 0.3% of assets. Services include an in-depth analysis and assistance in transferring assets. You might also check the website of the National Association of Personal Financial Advisors, www.napfa.org, or the Garrett Planning Network, www.garrettplanningnetwork.com. Both organizations list fee-only planners. Using one of these advisors can be much less expensive than paying a percentage of your assets under management, known as AUM, year after year to a commission-based broker or other financial advisor. You should also check with the Securities and Exchange Commission, www.sec.gov/investor/brokers.htm, for any disciplinary history on the registered advisor you are considering using. The simple, successful three-fund portfolio, which nearly anyone can manage, will significantly reduce your need for an expensive advisor. Investors seeking more advanced information, often in place of an advisor, should read The Boglehead's Guide to Investing and or The Boglehead's Guide to Retirement Planning. Benefit 2. No asset bloat. When a managed fund is flooded with new money, it is very disruptive and usually results in lower returns. This is called asset bloat. There are several reasons asset bloat is bad. As investors rush into a popular active mutual fund, new cash is disruptive because it requires the fund manager to spend more time with additional security analysis. It also increases the fund manager's duties as it is imperative to get the new cash invested as quickly as possible. The manager cannot invest large amounts of cash in a company without impacting the market for that company's stock. This is because a large purchase of company stock will drive up the price of that stock as shares are bought. Market impact is especially true of small company stocks. The fund manager will find it difficult to invest the money in a satisfactory manner because as fund assets rise, the number of appropriate additional stocks shrinks, making it difficult to maintain the fund's objectives. The fund manager also knows that transaction costs, e.g. commissions, bid-ask spreads, market impact, and opportunity costs, will increase, affecting existing fund shareholders. Mutual fund regulations prohibit a fund from owning more than 10% of the outstanding voting shares of an issuer. This restriction may prevent a fund manager from buying more shares of company stock that the fund already owns, thereby forcing managers to buy less desirable securities. The Fidelity Magellan Fund is often mentioned as a victim of asset bloat. In 1990, the Magellan Fund was the largest mutual fund in the world. Unfortunately for investors who came in late, its returns subsequently plunged to the bottom 1% of its Morningstar category. The result was that many investors in Magellan lost a large part of their life savings. Vanguard is known for its willingness to close a fund when that fund becomes bloated. In 2016, Vanguard closed its $30.6 billion dividend growth fund, VDIGX, to new investors. As former Vanguard CEO Bill McNabb explained, Vanguard is proactively taking steps to slow strong cash flows to help ensure that the advisor's ability to produce competitive long-term results for investors is not compromised. David Swensen, Yale University Chief Investment Officer and author of Unconventional Success, wrote, "Bloated portfolios and excessive fees represent the most visible ways in which mutual fund manager agents extract rents from mutual fund investor principals. Total market index funds are not affected by asset bloat because all new money is easily distributed among the stocks of thousands of companies." Bogleheads speak out. "Dear Taylor, this three-fund portfolio and education on index funds has saved me from most of the tensions of investing." S.A. Benefit 3. No index front-running. Index front-running is when traders know in advance that an index manager must sell a stock because it no longer meets the index specifications. Perhaps a small-cap stock has grown too large for its small-cap index, or a value stock has become a growth stock. In both cases, traders know that the index fund manager must sell one or more of its stocks in that category. This works the same as when a trader knows in advance that an index manager must buy a stock to meet the index specifications. Advanced knowledge normally lowers the price of a stock to be sold and raises the price of a stock before it is bought, to the detriment of both the index fund manager and the fund investors. In March 2015, American Airlines announced it would be added to the S&P 500 index. Between the time of the announcement and the time when the company was added to the index 4 days later, the company's stock increased 11%, thereby increasing the cost to the index and ultimately hurting its performance. A study by Winton Capital Management Limited found that the S&P 500 index lost 0.2 percentage points from 1990 to 2011 due to front-running. Total market index funds do not suffer the impact of front-running because they hold nearly every publicly listed stock. If a stock is sold by a small-cap index and bought by a mid-cap index, it makes no difference to the passive manager of a total market index fund because the index fund manager neither sells nor buys the stock, thus avoiding front-running and other hidden turnover costs. Bogleheads speak out. I have used the three-fund portfolio for many years with great success. Dio. Benefit 4. No fund manager risk. Since Mr. Bogle's introduction of the first retail index fund, First Index Investment Trust, the financial industry has fought a losing battle, spending billions each year in an attempt to keep investors in expensive and highly profitable, for them, actively managed funds, rather than in low-cost index funds. A good example of manager risk is the Fidelity Magellan Fund, FMAGX, managed by Peter Lynch. Between 1977 and 1990, the fund averaged a 29% annual return, making Magellan the best performing and largest mutual fund in the world. So, what happened? In 1990, Mr. Lynch decided to retire. A succession of new managers were hired and fired as the Magellan Fund began to underperform the market. Shareholders, many of whom bought near the top, began selling with large losses as the fund's return declined. On January 12, 2018, the Magellan Fund was in the bottom 11% of all funds in its Morningstar category for 10-year returns. Bruce Berkowitz, manager of the Fairholme Fund, is a more recent example of fund manager risk. Berkowitz was Morningstar's Manager of the Decade in 2009, but on January 12, 2018, the Fairholme Fund was in the bottom 1% of its category. As of this recording, Mr. Berkowitz remains manager. Specific fund manager risks. 1. Fund managers always leave. In the case of Peter Lynch, it was because he decided to retire. However, fund managers leave for other reasons: sickness, transfer to another fund, a move to another company. Many fund managers are simply fired for underperformance. Total market index funds do not have this problem. 2. Winning fund managers later underperform. It seems obvious that a good stock or bond picker should easily outperform an index fund that simply reflects the average stock return. Nevertheless, like Bill Miller and Bruce Berkowitz, whose stories were recounted earlier, most winning fund managers eventually underperform their index benchmark. This is called reversion to the mean. Warren Buffett has used the monkey illustration to explain why it is impossible to know whether a fund manager has outstanding talent or was just lucky. Quote, if 1,000 managers make a market prediction at the beginning of the year, it's very likely that the calls of at least one will be correct for 9 consecutive years. Of course, 1,000 monkeys would be just as likely to produce a seemingly all-wise profit. End quote. Index fund managers make no attempt to pick winning stocks. Their job performance is measured by low cost and by accurately tracking their index. Of the 355 equity funds in 1970, fully 233 of those funds have gone out of business. Only 24 outpaced the market by more than 1% a year. These are terrible odds. Jack Bogle, The Little Book of Common Sense Investing. Bogleheads speak out. I find it amazing how quickly a really good idea can gain traction among so many people. Thanks for advocating this remarkable approach to investing. It has done a great deal of good for a large number of people. R.A. Benefit 5. No individual stock risk. I remember attending a Miami Herald Money Show in March 2000. Unknown at the time, this was the year and month when the U.S. stock market had reached its peak after a long bull market and was about to suffer one of the worst bear markets since the Great Depression. Jack Bogle and Jim Cramer, the financial television personality, were the keynote speakers. Jack spoke first and warned the large audience that the stock market was overvalued and he reminded them about the importance of holding a substantial allocation of high-quality bonds. When Mr. Bogle finished speaking, it was Mr. Kramer's turn. I was standing in the back of the auditorium with Mel Lindauer, my co-author, on two other Boglehead books. Jim asked the audience to take out a pencil and paper and write down the names of 10 individual stocks he would be recommending as sure winners. Mel and I watched as hundreds of naive investors eagerly wrote down Mr. Kramer's top stock picks. I couldn't fault them for effort, since I had once tried this on my